welcome to this special edition of Between the Margins on CHRW Radio 94.9 FM. I'm Michelle Boyce.
And I'm Fallon Cunning.
And Gio is taking a break on this family day up at Brockville, spending some time with his family. So all the best to Gio, and he'll be back on our next show. So this show is about LGBT parenting, and oh, it's a big topic, and we've only got 1 hour to cover it, and unfortunately, due to technical glitches, one of our guests is unable to make it onto the show due to the fact that I can't get him on the board. So, my apologies to Paul, but we're going to go ahead with what we have here. So, the topic is LGBT parenting, and you're a parent yourself?
Yes, I am, to three beautiful children.
And I'm a parent, and actually my daughter's on the show in a little bit on our This Is Me section. So, yeah. Today we're going to talk to Rachel Epstein, who is with the LGBTQ Parenting Network in Toronto. We're going to talk to Joan Wiley, who is the founder of Transparent Canada out of St. Catharines, and she does amazing stuff with other parents and stuff. And we have a special interview with Freya Bauer from, and she's was from up here in London and the daughter of a good friend of mine, but she's down in Minnesota enjoying the cold down there. So got a great lineup for you today. And just to introduce it a little bit, we have parenting. What is such a huge topic, eh, Fallon?
Very big topic. I've been sitting back trying to think about what exactly should I focus on, but there's so many aspects to parenting and LGBT in particular, so what do you really want to focus on? And my experiences as a, I guess technically a gay parent, have been some positive, some negative, and my experiences haven't been altogether terrible, but at the same time, they haven't been exactly normal or comfortable either, and have led to a lot of problems in my life, so yeah, it's a very big issue.
So what's probably the biggest issue? Schools?
Schools, most definitely. Though my current school that the kids are in, my son is in, it has been awesome. But previous schools in my hometown have been somewhat less receptive.
Now, you have additional challenges because, you know, you've got a son who is exceptionally bright but has a few other challenges that he's facing, right?
Yes.
So that, you know, compounds the issues for you parenting, because you don't know when you're dealing with LGBT issues, and you don't know when you're dealing with the mental health stigma attachments to, you know, the stuff that's going on with your son. So, but you have a super supportive partner.
Yes, I do.
And I think that helps immensely.
Oh, very much so. She's been awesome.
I know with my family and raising my two kids, who are getting a little bit older now, and, you know, my son's in high school and my daughter's in grade 6, and, you know, they've grown up their entire lives within the queer community, and, you know, my daughter, you know, she says things like, you know, there's amazing people that she's met through the community and stuff like that. So we're going to listen to a clip now, and this is Freya.
I know. Honestly, I think there's a lot more love in mine, if in all honesty. I don't know. I don't know. I think my mom and I are a lot closer than a lot of my friends and my parents, which I really love. I really love having my mom as my mom, I think. And I wouldn't want her any other way.
What are some of the challenges that you faced?
I don't know. Like, I never really told a lot of people. Like, if they asked, I wouldn't really lie. But, you know, sometimes people assume that when I say my mom's married, that it's to a man. And I don't always correct them. Like, it's just, like, I don't want people to think that I'm different because maybe my family's not so conventional. Like, I don't know. Like, I know people generally try to not be too judgmental, but it does creep in there. And it's like, I don't want their opinion of me to change. I don't know how it would change, but...
But it's always your fear.
Yeah, like, sometimes people talk to you differently or... I don't know, my mom's divorced and a lesbian and I don't know. There's always that. And, like, I remember when I was little, I was, like, really afraid to tell people just because, I don't know, I didn't want them to think badly of my mom as well. Like, I don't know, I think, I know that times have changed a fair amount. And so, like, now I'm just like, yeah, whatever. But I remember my friend Emily in middle school, both of our lives are, like, weirdly parallel. We're both, like, 10 years old, and I remember finding out that her mom was also a lesbian. Was like, I don't know, it was so comforting because there was like finally somebody there that like relates to what was going on and like understands, but it was good to have somebody there. Yeah, I guess I was always like afraid that people would think that my mom wasn't a good mom. Like I didn't want them to get that impression just because our family was a little bit different. My mom's amazing. Totally amazing.
What are some of the positives?
I think my mom and I are very close. And I'm not sure whether that's because I always kind of thought of her as a single mom, even though she's rarely ever single. But I don't know. I feel like she always was really good at including me in decisions and, you know, things that were happening. Like, I don't know. I think I get a really cool perspective into a community that maybe people don't usually get to see into as much. I mean, I've met more gay, lesbian, trans people than pretty much anybody I know that's my age. So that's really cool. And I think I have a better understanding of issues that concern them. And I think I have, I don't know, I can relate to things like that a lot easier, which is, I don't know, it's really cool. I wouldn't want to change that at all. I mean, who would want to miss gay pride in Toronto?
That is an event, isn't it?
It's quite an event. Kind of a weird combination. Have you read Families Like Mine? It's about a woman who grew up, I think it was in the 80s, and her dad was gay. So it's about just her growing up, and she's worked with a lot of kids of gay parents. She brought up something really interesting that I never really noticed before, but then that kind of brought to my attention. It was like, oh, yeah. So it's like you're kind of part of the LGBT community in a way because you're like associated with them, like you've grown up with it, but you're not like actually in it. Like you're not gay, lesbian, trans, bi, whatever. So it's kind of a weird thing because you can understand it and relate to it and you have history with it, but you're not in it, like you personally. I mean, like, I definitely plan on joining, like, the Gay Straight Alliance when I go to university and stuff like that. Like, it's kind of a different relationship to the community, I guess.
So what is your perception from that of the community standing apart but afar?
I don't know. I think it's a really... tight-knit community. I mean, obviously, it kind of has to be because there wasn't a lot of support for a really long time. And, like, I think it's really good. I think that there's, I mean, that kind of this, like, whole network that's kind of just been built up out of need. And I think it's really strong. And I'm so glad to be able to be at least part of it and maybe kind of removed away. But I'm glad I got to see it.
Oh, I don't think you'll ever move completely away from it.
No. I don't think I could even if I wanted to. I mean, and I don't know. I think I'm a lot more aware of various social issues. I remember when I was little, everybody was, you know, oh, that's so gay or whatever. That made me so mad, so mad. And it didn't bother anybody else because it didn't really apply to them. And it, I don't know, it always made me so angry. So I guess I'm a lot more sensitive to maybe things that a lot of people would brush aside. I remember in fifth grade, there's this kid, we're talking about how we would make the world a better place, and this kid said, you get rid of all the gay people, and I flipped out. I wrote a letter to this, it was this like kind of alternative girls magazine, and it was in the How Aggravating section that got published.
So if there's one thing that you wanted to say to your mom.
Thank you, definitely thank you for always... always, always being there and being so supportive of absolutely everything.
I can speak to Freya's story. I have a friend who talks to me on a regular basis and helps to deal with some of my own issues. Her name is Sarah. And she confided to me that her parents were also, her mother was also lesbian and had a female partner. And she is one of the most level-headed and upbeat people I've ever met. And having people like that around has really helped me. And
it's just further proof that your parents don't have to be straight. They can be anything as long as they're supportive, as long as they're caring, and as long as they're willing to put themselves out there for their children. And I believe that's all that counts, really.
Absolutely. And there's a study that I remember reading about, and a lot of the issues that we talk about in our schools and all of the other issues about bullying and those, there was a fascinating study done that said basically that if your kids are embarrassed by their home situation and they don't receive the support in their home that they might otherwise, they are extremely more susceptible to bullying at school.
Absolutely.
So those people that think that it's all the school's problem and the bullying issue is all the school's problem, it is a school problem, and zero tolerance is zero tolerance. Mm-hmm. But to help support those children, the best thing that you can do is provide a supportive environment within the house.
Absolutely. We had an incident a week ago. I was walking the girls to school, and as I was letting Gwendolyn walk into the schoolyard, one of the children pipes up, it was, "Are you a male or a female?" And I said, "I'm a female." And as I turned to walk away, the child said, "Oh, he's just a homo." And I'm like, "Pardon me." So I directly walked into the school and said, "Gwendolyn, take me to your teacher." So I went in and I informed the teacher what happened. I just said, "I'm not offended. I just want you to know that this is what this child has said to me." And I walked away and went home. And then later that day, Gwendolyn had come home with a letter from this child with an apology. And I thought, that is fantastic. I would have never have gotten that anywhere else besides this school. So that's why I'm really happy with this school. And we don't want to move from that area at all, because that school rocks. But that's been the rare occasion. Other schools have not done that. I've brought up bullying issues with my son, just being treated differently from other schools in other places. So hopefully that school can be the shining light for the rest of the school board and the rest of the school system to have that support.
Yeah, my kid's school has been absolutely fantastic, and that's saying a lot considering where we live and the amount of oppression there is in the general area where we live. So we're going to be back after this break. This Is Me has a lot of meaning to me because it's my little girl. And there'll be a few messages, and then we'll be back.
Me.
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 This is what it's like
to be me.
To be me.
This is what it's like to be me.
When I was little, I had two moms, and then they got divorced, and I had a dad and a mom, and then they got divorced, and I've had like pretty much friends, a lot of friends, and people I could call family, and there's another girlfriend in our family, and I just have fun with them and enjoy them with me. I just like having them by close to me.
So when you were little, you did have a dad.
Yes, I did.
And then after your mom and dad got divorced, your mom has girlfriends. How is that different?
It's not very different, I don't think, anyway, but I just have fun with whoever I'm with and enjoy. I don't really care who I'm with, if it's a boy or a girl. I have fun with both in different ways.
Was it easier when your mom was married to a man?
In some ways it was, and in some ways it wasn't. Like, when Larry was here, my friends, knew it more and understood it more. But when I have a girl to play with, then they do craft with me and have fun, and it's not as awkward.
So you're closer with your mom's girlfriends than you were with your mom's husband.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
If there's one thing that you could say to all your moms, what would it be?
That I love them very much.
welcome back. And that was my little girl, and my heart just goes pitter-patter because she's so good at these radio interviews and all of the editing and everything else. She did it all herself, which hats off to her. She's 12, and Mommy's really proud of her. So the issues of the schools and, you know, the hot and cold that we run across mm-hmm. with various things, and the agency LGBT Parenting, LGBTQ Parenting Network, see, they keep changing their name on me, they help to advocate for all of these various programs and various students and everything else. And we have Rachel Epstein, who is the head of the LGBT Parenting Network and a close personal friend with me. I actually met her through the network. I went to one of the original community forums that they had, and I met her through there, and then I ended up on my very first television interview, which we won't talk about because I learned a lot of lessons about TV and how editors can make you sound like absolute morons while you're on a show. So that was a very bad experience for me, but I learned a lot of lessons, and this is Rachel. I'm speaking with Rachel Epstein, who is the head of the LGBT Parenting Network in Toronto. Is that the name still right now?
LGBTQ Parenting Network.
I know there was a big name contest.
Oh, well, that was for something else. That was, the name contest was for the website, which is the website for the LGBTQ Parenting Connection, which is a kind of a connection between a whole bunch of groups who are doing work around queer parenting. Beginning with my program, the LGBTQ Parenting Network at the Sherbourne Health Center, and queer parenting programs at the 519 Community Center, and the Family Service Toronto, which is where my program originated. So we together have sort of formed this thing called the LGBTQ Parenting Connection, and we have a new website, which is lgbtqparentingconnection.ca, which is a really fabulous resource for people if they want to go. It's like a one-stop place to go for information about queer parenting. And there's stuff there about, you know, events and programs that are going on. There's all kinds of resources. You can get information about research projects and advocacy that's happening. But it is really a great website, so I highly recommend that people check it out. So that was the name contest. But my program changed from the LGBT Parenting Network to the LGBTQ Parenting Network a couple of years ago.
Tell me about the LGBTQ Parenting Network. What's your mandate and who do you serve?
Well, we serve really queer parents, I'd say queer prospective parents and their children and families. But what we also do is a lot of educational work with various kinds of professionals who will be working with queer families. So we do lots and lots of training and workshops for people who are interested in making their services more accessible and more welcoming to queer families. But we also, you know, our aim is just to kind of improve life for queer parents. And we do that through holding, you know, we run courses. We run a course called Dykes Planning Tykes with the 519. And a brother course to that is Daddies and Papas to Be. And we also developed with them a course for trans men who were thinking about having children. So Dykes Planning Tykes is for lesbian, bi, queer women who are considering parenthood. Daddy's Papas to Be is for gay, bi, queer men who are thinking about becoming parents. Trans Fathers to Be is for trans men who are thinking about becoming parents. So we do things like that. We run those programs to help people think through, you know, the complexities of the issues that they have to think about when they're bringing kids into their lives. We develop a lot of resources. We worked with you, Michelle, I remember a few years ago developing what has been an unbelievably successful poster, which we call the Family Tree, a Queering the Family Tree poster, and it came out of our kids' very sometimes negative experiences in their classrooms when the Family Tree exercise came up. So we developed this poster that kind of queers the family tree and has pictures of different families and the word family in 35 languages around the border. And we've now printed 30,000 of those posters, and we are encouraging people to put them up in any public space. So we do things like that. Along with that, we've developed a brochure series on, you know, various topics related to queer parenting. And we also do a lot of, as I said, education and a lot of research. We partner a lot with various people doing research on queer parenting. But then it's really important to us that research have a practical application, that it's research that's really community-based and that will result in, you know, making the world a better place for queer parents. So one example of that has been some of our research has been used to lobby in relation to the Assisted Human Reproduction Act, which is the legislation that regulates fertility clinics and sperm banks in Canada since 2004. So we pulled together like a advocacy group that wanted to look at what are the issues for LGBTQ people in relation to that legislation, and we have been quite successful in terms of actually being brought to the table. You know, they've actually brought us to Ottawa several times to talk about our concerns, and so it's kind of very hopeful in that way that we're, you know, having an impact, you know, being brought to the table in various places where we haven't been before. So that's what we do.
And I remember when your program very first started, you filled a huge void that was out there. And can you talk about why we have the LGBTQ Parenting Network?
Well, I guess because even though we have sort of unprecedented legal and social recognition of our families in Canada, like in some ways we're so fortunate to live in Canada, there are still, you know, many ways that our families are not accepted, that our families are attacked. I still quote this quite staggering statistic to me. It's a 2001 statistic, but it hasn't changed that much, that a poll found that close to 50% of the Canadian population believes that gays and lesbians, and I would think by extension, you know, bi and trans people, should not be allowed to become parents. And I think that that has probably changed a few percentage points because of the same-sex marriage debate, which I think changed some people's minds. But even to think that 45% of the Canadian population thinks that we shouldn't be allowed to have children, like, to me that's quite profound, and it means that we still live in this highly politicized context. Our families are in, you know, are viewed within this highly politicized context, which means that, you know, we face discrimination and our kids face discrimination, and we really need to develop ways that we can support each other, and people really, you know, people in queer families really want to be around other queer families, and they want their kids to be around other kids who are growing up in families that look like theirs. So we really need to support each other, and we also really need to do the research and the education and the advocacy in order to kind of improve the quality of life for our families.
For the first time since I started this show, I had guests decline to come on the show because they felt that it was unsafe for their families to come on and talk about their experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think people feel very protective of their families, and their kids are involved, and they feel very protective of their kids. So I understand, though, you know, I understand making those decisions. And at the same time, the more of us who are willing to be public, are willing to be visible. I mean, one of the things that people experience as a hardship sometimes is the invisibility of our families and of our kids and all of that. It's a tough one. It really, really is a tough one. And I think people really want to protect their children ultimately.
My kids, I'm now engaged to a woman and in a lesbian relationship, and the parents put pressure on the kids with who they should or shouldn't play with at school.
Yeah, sometimes it comes much more from the parents than it does from the kids. And I think that that whole issue of schools is enormous for queer families and for our kids. And I remember in those original focus groups that you were part of, universally in every one of those groups, people said, we're so worried about our kids in schools. How do we equip them to handle whatever's going to come their way? How do we approach schools? How do we, you know, like, it's a huge issue because our kids spend so much of their time in schools. And we did actually do some interviews with teenagers because we wanted to find out what's happening in school. So we interviewed, I think in the end, 31 kids with queer parents about their experiences in schools. And some really interesting things came out of that in terms of what actually helps, you know, what helps, what doesn't help, where do kids find support. Does it, you know, it doesn't always help when you go and tell a parent or teacher about something negative that's happening because you get, you know, you're seen as the tattletale, you're seen as the one that got other kids in trouble, right? Well, and especially I think around the kids just said over and over again, like when it's homophobia or transphobia, nobody stops it, right? Like the other kinds of things that kids say get interrupted. The teacher will say, that's not a good thing to say, or however, you know, it gets intervened on. But somehow this is let go by all the time. Like, nobody says anything. And that's what the kids were saying was really, really hurtful to them. So even, you know, that's so gay, right? Like, the school is full of that, right? And it hurts our kids. It hurts queer kids, and it hurts our kids every time that kind of stuff is happening.
What about your own family life and how your family dynamic works?
Well, my family is, you know, sort of my immediate family is I have an almost 18-year-old daughter. Myself and her other mother were together in a, you know, in a partnership until about 7 years ago. So we stopped living together about 7 years ago, and now we live across the street from each other. So we live absolutely directly across the street. So our daughter spends half time with each of us and just runs across the street a lot. And then I also have a stepson from that relationship who's now 5, going to be 25 this next month. So that's kind of my immediate in close family. And then there's a number of other kids who I sort of consider part of my family. And there's other adults who my kids think of as part of their family, right? So I feel like we live in this kind of very extended queer family, which is quite lovely.
It's interesting how our families, when we're open to the concept, seems to grow beyond the traditional, you know, two-parent, one-child type of relationships.
Mm-hmm. But yes, that's one of my hopes is that, you know, in the ways that we're getting legal recognition, we have same-sex marriage, and the ways that our families are getting recognized, that we continue to fight for recognition of the complexities of our families, you know, that it not just be families that look like the traditional nuclear family that get recognized, but that we continue to struggle until all of our families get the recognition that they need. And there was that interesting case actually in London where you are, which you probably know about, which it was referred to as AABBCC, and it was a lesbian couple and a man who were parenting together. They wanted the three of them to be all recognized as parents. They originally lost the case and then they appealed it, and everybody under the sun intervened on the appeal, including, you know, Focus on the Family and Real Women and those kinds of sort of upholders of the traditional family, but as well as groups like the Family Service Toronto, who has a much, much broader and much more progressive definition of family. And they won on the appeal, so they managed to get recognition of all three of them, which I think was particularly interesting because it was the first time that courts had recognized people outside of a conjugal relationship. You know, these people weren't, all of them were not in romantic sexual relationships with each other, but it was recognized that they could parent together. And I think that's a really interesting step forward for our families.
The programs that you have going there are so valuable to so many people, and life just wouldn't be the same without the parenting network.
Well, thank you, Michelle.
You know I'm one of your biggest fans.
Oh, well, you are amazing. You've been around since the very, very beginning and so consistently. So it's really, it's wonderful to have people like you around.
We are all in this.
And welcome back to Between the Margins. I'm Michelle Boyce.
I'm Fallon Cunning.
And we're talking about LGBT parenting issues. And, you know, there's some pretty staggering stats brought up by Rachel in that clip there. You know, 50% of Canadian population feel that LGBT people should not be parents.
I believe that statistic. I can't talk. Statistic. Yeah,
that's...
What do you say to that?
What do you say to that, considering how many of us are parents, and we have such amazing kids that have come out of queer families, like Freya, for example, who was just on the show, who is this absolutely focused individual who I can't say enough wonderful things about how amazing of a young lady she has turned out. And, you know, of course I may be biased, but, you know, my two kids, I can't say enough about them, and I get compliments all of the time about how mature they are, how, you know, well behaved they are. You know, they seem to not fight as much as other kids do between each other, and they stick out for each other, and they stick up for their moms, which, you know, you can do anything within our house and bash each other all you want, but nobody messes with my kids' moms, and you know, they stand up for us no matter what.
Oh, definitely. As you know, my son came with me to the anti-hate rally back in October. He's been my biggest support, and even with all the changes going on in his life, he's been the most supportive person in my life, besides Rebecca. And it's been fantastic. Our relationship is getting nothing but stronger since I've accepted who I am and what I am. And I think that's the trick with dealing with all that homophobia out there, is as long as you can accept yourself and love yourself, then people aren't going to react as nasty to you, because they're not seeing someone who's timid. They're not seeing someone who's scared. They're seeing someone who's accepting themselves and vibrant and energetic. And predators are afraid of that. So the people who are out there to hurt you are going to stay away from you more than the people who are actually going to help you and give you support.
Yeah, and your son made the paper with his sign that, you know, I love my trans parent. Mm-hmm. And he was up there at the rally holding it up strong. And, you know, he made that sign himself, didn't
he? Oh, definitely. Yeah, he came up with all the quotes and everything.
Yeah. Oh, I was just so proud of him that day. And, you know, every time I see him, he never ceases to, you know, surprise me with how, you know, mature and intelligent he is, especially, you know, with the challenges that he faces in life. I mean, hats off to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when we talk about kids of queer parents, I think resiliency is probably the biggest thing that we can talk about.
Absolutely.
You know, they overcome so much adversity in their day-to-day lives that are brought on them by their parents, and it doesn't get them down. They seem to just get stronger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Freya was saying, you know, she doesn't identify as LGBT at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, neither do either of my children. They're both identify straight at the moment. They're still young. I mean, there's time. We're recruiting and all that, you know. Trying to, you know, make our kids queer and all those things.
Yeah.
But, you know, that study is not any different than the Globe and Mail's article that, you know, stated that 50% of Canadians feel that we coddle minorities too much.
Mm.
You know, so it's not out of step with the way Canadians feel about, you know, all marginalized people. Yes. As a whole. You know, Canada is this open country that is supposed to be the land of opportunity and the multicultural center of the world. Yet, you know, 50% of our population feel that marginalized populations get too much attention.
It's very the hatred and the racism and the homophobia, it's still there. It's just not as vibrant. It's not right out there for everyone to see. You don't really experience it until you're out there and putting yourself out. And
that came,
you're noticing it.
Yeah, that came very clear in our last show about Black History Month.
Yes.
And the guests that we had on that show. And you can pick that up on the archives on our website at www.betweenthemargins.ca.
Mm-hmm.
We've come a long way, and Canada is, you know, two steps and a twirl above the rest of the world, but that doesn't mean that we can stop. It doesn't mean that we can, you know, stop trying to get the world to identify that our families are our families, and they're loving families. We love our children. Our children love us, and they're happy.
Absolutely. I'd have to say my son is more happy now than he was 3 years ago. Because he now has both his parents. We're not arguing. We're not fighting. We're both doing our own thing, and he sees us both equally, and he is content and happy. And now he's able to concentrate on his schoolwork. He's able to do the things he wants to do, and he's able to talk to us now. Whereas before, when, you know, when no one was accepting anything things weren't happy. So acceptance is the key to that happiness, and we need to let the rest of the country know and the rest of the world know that that's the way. Acceptance. And once they accept it, it's not going to be so hard to live with this anymore.
Exactly. And you're the transparent. And now we're going to hear from Joan Wiley, who is the parent of a trans child, so the opposite side of the coin. I'm speaking with Joan Wiley, and she is the founder of Transparent Canada, whose motto is celebrating our trans children. Hi, Joan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. So thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. It's great.
So tell me a little bit about your organization, when it started, why it started, and all of those juicy details.
Sure. Well, our son came out to us in 2002, and at that time, we knew very little about transgender issues. And so, you know, I went looking for resources, couldn't find many, found some. But what I really missed was being able to talk to another parent. And so in 2004, we came out to our families with varying degrees of success and to our friends as well. And in September 2005, I formed Transparent because I thought, geez, you know, if our family is having this kind of difficulty finding resources and making connections, then other parents must be as well. So that was really foundational reason why Transparent was formed, to provide resources for other parents. And it's online. We have a Facebook group, and we have a website. But there are enough people from where I'm from in the country that I'm actually thinking of starting face-to-face meetings, like an actual group meeting. Transparent Canada is technically an associate member of a PFLAG chapter in Niagara, where I'm from. So that has worked out really well.
And what is PFLAG for those that are listening?
Oh, of course. PFLAG is the most wonderful organization on the entire planet. PFLAG Canada stands for Parents, Friends, and Families of Lesbians and Gays. And even though there's no T in PFLAG, it is still very supportive of the transgender community.
And PFLAG doesn't actually ring off your tongue. So.
No, not really. No. I guess some people call it PFLAG Plus.
It's everything else.
Plus and plus and plus, right? Well, there are more letters being added to the acronym LGBTQ. I mean, there's A and I and double Q and, you know, right?
I-I-T-T. Yeah, it's long.
Yeah.
Oh, so you started this organization, and what is your mandate?
I think mainly to provide support for other parents. That's how I see it, just to be encouraging, to be supportive. And it's not just parents who are contacting Transparent. Quite a few trans people are also contacting Transparent. Some people wanting to know how to come out to their parents, asking advice on how to come out to their parents. I really don't have all of those answers. I can only speak from my personal experience, and I can only say what worked for us. But I do, you know, also have learned of the experiences of other families, and I share that if I think it's appropriate.
If these trans people call and ask for advice, what is the primary advice that you give them?
My primary advice is that they're okay, that parents sometimes have a really hard time with this, and in large part I think it's because parents also have their own baggage. If I had a dime for every parent who said, you know, I always thought that I was liberal-minded and progressive, but when my own child came out, I discovered that I really wasn't, I would be a rich woman by now. I think we all harbor these ideas that I think at the base we love our children, but sometimes we just don't know how to maneuver and negotiate some of these things that are thrown at us. And certainly transgender issues are very complicated for everyone to understand. Parents, I think, have, from my own experience, I mean, I remember being very conflicted, and, you know, you remember the first words you heard, "Congratulations," said the obstetrician. "You have a girl."
And from that point on, you have expectations. And even though you, I mean, I thought I was pretty progressive too. But I had difficulties as well. Boy, those pronouns, they were tough to get around.
Yeah, I've been supporting the community for 15 years, and I still mess them up occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and me too. And I think that's a message that that I would have for trans folks and their parents. Don't be too hard on yourself. It takes time. It takes time. And parents, I think many parents try really, really hard. Others are not as supportive, but I've learned, at least I try not to be too critical of parents who are having a hard time. That's just where they are in their journey. And they may come around. You know, there's always that hope. And others, they adjust fairly quickly. But we can't compare them, really, because everyone is on a unique journey. There's no rule. Yeah, there's no rule as to where a parent should be. There's no timeline or deadline that, you know, at 6 months after disclosure, you should be at point A, B, or C, or you should feel A, B, or C. It just does not work that way.
Absolutely. So what I hear from trans people across the province is, you know, my parents aren't getting it quick enough.
Yeah.
And what would you say to those people?
Oh, well, I can fully understand why trans people would feel that way. I would imagine that there is such an imperative to be who you are. But for parents, it takes a while. And again, some parents get it fairly quickly and others don't. I think that there are some really tough spots for parents. And the first one is the initial disclosure. I mean, that can be shocking for parents. Almost shocks them into a paralysis for many of us. And I think that another really tough spot is the start of transitioning. And I think at that point, parents say, wow, any hope that we had that this might be a stage, or, you know, that our child could, you know, change his or her mind, it's gone at that point. And that's a really hard point for parents as well.
Yeah, that's the point where all of the pressure and anything that they might actually try to be manipulating into the scenario to bring their child around is for naught.
Right. I mean, I think that as parents, we would all love to figure out how, you know, to respond to this quickly. But we need time to process as well. And I mean, I've heard many trans people have told me, well, you know, we've had our whole lives to process this in our own heads. And so they've said to me, as a parent, we don't expect you to get it right away because it's come out of the blue. And many parents, including myself, just had no idea.
It kind of comes out of the blue. I mean, most experience, you know, they've come to a point of no return when they disclose to their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it's the onus is on the parents to cope.
Mm-hmm. Some parents cope better than others.
My name is Michelle Boyce, and you're listening to Between the Margins on CHRW Radio 94.9 FM. And I'm speaking with the founder of Transparent Canada, Joan Wiley. Joan, what are some of the challenges that parents face coping with their child transitioning?
I find that very often, I mean, there are a number of triggers for parents to find difficulty. I think, you know, one is culture. One perhaps is religion. That's a big one. It's huge. I mean, I've had many, many parents tell me that they feel such conflict because they're being told in their churches that their child is an abomination in the eyes of God. But at the same time, they still have these tremendously loving feelings towards their child. And they really have to work very hard at working through those conflicting feelings.
Yet, I mean, the religious organizations that call trans people an abomination, I've sat down with ministers from every faith that I can possibly sit down with, and none of them have found anything that states that trans people are an abomination.
Right.
So I can never understand the religious ground. I can understand, you know, gay, lesbian, okay, that there's definite distinct passages in some religious texts that...
Which are disputed by theologians as well.
They're definitely disputed.
Yeah.
There definitely is an argument that can be made on one side or the other. But when you talk about trans issues, there is absolutely nothing in any religious text that myself or any minister that I've, you know, had this discussion with can find.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was explained to me that it's understood that if you accept gays and lesbians, then that's a portal to accepting even worse things like transsexuality or bestiality or, you know, or anything like that. You know, like it's just suddenly, you know, people are criminalized. And yes, I mean, and I have asked people, well, please show me the passages. And part of it, I mean, is I really do want to know. I need to know information like this, but no one has ever been able to show me the passages. I mean, I'm a Unitarian, so my experience was very different from what some parents are experiencing in church.
Absolutely. The Unitarian system is much more open to basically everything.
Mm-hmm. The Unitarian Church has long been in the vanguard of advancing LGBTQ rights. I mean, when we came out in our church, we have a period in our service, and I think it's true with many Unitarian churches, of what's called joys and concerns. And I remember very clearly it came time to tell the rest of the congregation about our change in our family dynamics, and standing in front of the church and telling the church members what was going on in our life, and we received a standing ovation. Now, I don't imagine there are too many other churches where that would happen, but I always knew in my heart that no matter how difficult it was going to be, I would at least have the support of this group of people.
And support is a very important part of, you know, being part of any marginalized community. But, I mean, the Ontario Human Rights Commission states that there is no group more disenfranchised than the trans community in Ontario, which is a pretty huge label to attach to any marginalized group.
Right.
So, I mean, I think support is the biggest thing, and that is what Transparent Canada.
Right. And I think what we have to remember is that when a trans person comes out, very often the whole family comes out. And so in order for parents to be able to adequately support their child, the parents themselves have to be supported. It becomes, it kind of one ball bounces into another. And I find that the stronger the parent, actually, then the better the child will be supported.
A lot of that is based upon fear, is it not?
Oh, fear is the number one. Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, we have all kinds of fears as parents, you know. We have fears that our children are going to be physically beaten up in a dark alley, or that they're going to face relentless hardship and discrimination. We fear that they'll never enjoy the beauty of an intimate relationship. We fear all kinds of things.
Our friends and family are going to say.
And then there is that coming out for parents as well. Absolutely. The fear of losing people who are close to us. And unfortunately, I think that is probably the rule rather than the exception.
Somebody once told me that coming out as a parent of a trans child definitely makes you understand who's your friend and who's your ally.
Absolutely. And it's amazing that you cannot predict who the supportive ones are going to be and who isn't going to be supportive. The ones we had pegged as being really supportive were not. And the ones the people we thought were going to have a real challenge with this were very supportive. So it you just never know. You just absolutely never know.
It's best to just be honest with them, is it not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've come out to other people who ask me, well, you know, how are the girls, not knowing, you know, we have a daughter as well, and not knowing, you know, the change in our dynamics. And I've told people in the middle of grocery stores, Mark's Work Warehouse, at the Bay, on city streets, you know, in classes, I mean, you just are. And part of the reason, I mean, I don't go into a lot of detail about my son's life. He is absolutely entitled to his privacy. But I do tell them that this is who our son is, because to deny it, for me anyway, is almost betraying him. And I will not betray my son. I mean, I love him, and I love him for who he is.
What about the very hot issue of family photographs and memorabilia?
Well, I know a lot of parents have removed photos of their trans kids from common rooms in their homes because those photos are reminders, and very sad reminders, for their children. And I've had moms ask me if I know of a photographer who can alter childhood photos to better reflect the gender of their trans child. I think it's a very personal issue as to whether to keep up photos or not. You can still have photos and family portraits, but maybe in the privacy of bedrooms. But common rooms, you know, I know many parents who respect their children's wishes and remove childhood photos.
It's kind of like losing your child, is it not?
It's like losing a child, and it's like gaining a child. Again, it's part of that conflict. I mean, I know many parents who have said, almost word for word, I receive emails from parents, and I just have to smile because they express in their letters exactly the same emotions that I felt. And they say, as I did, that you're jerked from one side of the spectrum to the other, and one day you'll be sort of wanting to yell from the mountain, yes, my child is okay, and now things are great, and now this all makes sense. And the next day, we're in mourning over the death of our child, our son or our daughter, at least who we thought was a son or a daughter. And there is a grieving process.
It kind of follows, in my experience, and maybe you can comment, the process kind of follows the same as the grief process. You go through, you know, all of the five steps of...
Right.
And then at the end, there's kind of that acceptance stage. Is that what you experience?
I think so. And some parents arrive at acceptance much faster than others. Again, they can't be faulted. Everyone processes things differently. And again, parents have their own issues many times to get through before they can accept their children.
Yeah, what advice would you give a parent who's not at that acceptance stage yet, but their trans child is absolutely mad as the dickens at them for it? What advice would you give the parent that's in that situation where they're not changing fast enough for their child?
Right. Well, what I might do is just ask. If I was that parent, I would certainly be trying to keep the lines of communication open. And maybe just say, listen, you know, I'm trying really hard, and I know you don't think that I'm working fast enough at this or moving fast enough at this, but I'm really trying hard, so please be patient. This is hard for me. I need to talk to other parents, or I need other resources. Can you find me resources to help me better understand? I think it can become almost a team effort. So, I mean, I would offer that. And also for parents, I have become a huge believer in baby steps, that things don't happen overnight. But if you can celebrate the little things and the little acceptances that happen over time, then before you know it, you've come a long way. So baby steps are a big deal. The sun will come up the next day. When you first find out, you kind of doubt that, but it really does come up the next day. And every day, things will get a little bit better.
I think that's the best thing, and it's keep the communications and the respect for each other open.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Dignity and respect, I think, on both sides, have to be firmly enforced. And that's an expectation we have of human beings. We want that for ourselves, so I would hope that we would want that for others as well.
Yeah, I find it's really difficult to imagine for people that there's a medical process that doesn't revert the individual back to a healthy stage that they were before.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean by that? You know, somebody gets sick and, you know, they get a cold or they get a major disease like cancer, then, you know, there's an expectation of the medical system to make them better, as in make them exactly the same as they were before.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about transition and trans people, the cure, the medical cure for it is to make them different. And I think that's probably the biggest difficulty to accept.
I don't know if it's about people different as it is about making people authentic. And I think that is something that we have to cling to as well, that our children are becoming authentic human beings for themselves. And therefore will be much happier in the end.
Somebody wants to get in touch with you for support. What is
Yes. Roots?
You have a website?
I do. It's www.transparentcanada.ca. The contact information is on there.
It's been wonderful talking to you, Joan, and thank you for joining us on Between the Margins.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been great.
You've been listening to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. My name's Michelle Boyce.
And I'm Fallon Cunning.
Special thanks to all of our guests today. Freya for sharing her stories about having a lesbian mom and her opinions on the community, etc. Special thanks to Joan Wiley from Transparent Canada, Rachel Epstein from the LGBTQ Parenting Network, and Paul Carr from Gay Dads Toronto.